Next speaker on the stakeholder perspective is Rick Bellavance, who is a lifelong Rhode Island resident and the president of the Rhode Island Party and Charter Boat Association. He also owns and operates Priority Fishing Charters. And he is, of course, the industry representative to the Rhode Island stamp process. He's also a member of the Rhode Island Commercial Fisheries Center and the Rhode Island Marine Fisheries Council. He sits on advisory panels for the National Marine Fisheries Service, New England Fisheries Management Council, Atlantic Coastal Cooperative Statistics Program, and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. And he's a graduate of the GMRI Marine Resources Education Program.
Thanks for having me here today. It's quite an honor to be here in front of you folks to talk about the fishing industry's whole take on this process of putting up these giant wind turbines on our fishing grounds. Which is what they're going to do. Just a couple of disclaimers before I get going. I'm a better fisherman than a public speaker, so try to be patient with me as I stutter and my cheeky voice and all that other stuff. And also, I had quite a bit of help with this PowerPoint presentation. A fellow by the name of Dave Butel, formerly from Rhode Island Sea Grant, now with the Coastal Resource Management Council, helped me put a lot of these slides together. He's a great friend of the fishermen and one of the main reasons why the fishing community had a great voice in Rhode Island's stamp process. You already saw this map. This is our Rhode Island stamp area. This is the area that the state of Rhode Island decided they were going to study and map out and zone out and figure out what uses are already taking place in that area and where it might be appropriate spots for different types of uses in the future, wind energy being one of them. The Ocean Stamp document is a gigundous book about this big. It's got all different chapters to it, and each one is listed here. There's some information on the ecology that's present within the stamp, how the different species get along with each other and where they live. There's a whole chapter on global climate change, which is one of the reasons that we're all exploring wind energy. Talked a lot about that already. Cultural and historic resources. The Native Americans that live in Rhode Island were concerned that a lot of their, they wanted to make sure that a lot of their concerns were addressed. There's a lot of historic resources within the stamp. Shipwrecks, things like that, that people like to go and explore and learn about our history. The commercial and recreational fishing industry, which is kind of what I'm concerned with. There's also the marine transportation and navigation. We have a huge traffic separation zone located within the stamp, and that allows for transportation to take place up into Narragansett Bay and also to Buzzard Bay. So that area is very important. And there's navigation concerns, which the United States Coast Guard had a valuable role in trying to determine how we're going to be able to run around these things. There was a bunch to talk about renewable energy, kind of going along with the global climate change stuff. Recreation and tourism, that was another thing that they spoke a lot about, the whale watching, scuba diving. A lot of those wrecks that are historic are also pretty popular with the diving community. There's sailboat racing. I know you may have heard of the America's Cup that happens in Newport, or used to, and that's pretty popular. They want to bring that back maybe someday. The tall ships come through. So all those types of uses are all take place within the ocean stamp area. They talked about other future uses, which is one thing that I think everybody needs to consider. Whether you're talking about what might take place in that area in the future, or the changes in projects as technology increases. When we first started this project, the turbines were described as 3.6 megawatt turbines. Now they're up to 5, and there's a potential for them to grow to the 10 megawatt turbines as technology increases. So as you sit here going through all of this process, recognize the fact that technology will change and things may be different in the future. Be prepared to adapt to that. The next two are kind of important to me. The existing statutes, the regulations and policies that are in effect right now, what is it that governs this area? Which organizations are in charge of different parts? The state controls the waters within 3 miles, and the federal government controls pretty much everything outside of that. So trying to get to know those different regulation policies that are in effect, that's an important thing to get a grip on before you move forward. And then policies of the ocean stamp. and this is going to be something I'm going to talk about in a few more minutes, but just to touch briefly, this is where you're going to set up all your guidelines going forward as to how different uses, different potential developments are handled in the future. And I think that's a very important thing to keep in mind and pay a lot of attention to. We made up a list of the stakeholders that were invited to participate in the ocean sand process. I'm going to switch to my pointer here. It's actually 3 pages long. And all these folks were very helpful. On every page, you'll see a bunch of different fishing organizations. And when I pile them all together, the major stakeholder in this area is the fishing community. Every page has them. All over the place. So these are the fishery stakeholders that we identified through the process. The recreational fishermen, the charter and party industry, which we're considered recreational fishermen, but I differ in that opinion. I feel like we do this for a living and we have a commercial flair to what we do, so I keep this separate. There's our mobile gear guys, the bottom trawlers, you've got your scallop dredgers, your purse seining and your midwater trawlers, and also ocean quag industry, that's not listed here. There's not a ton of that in Rhode Island, but certain areas of that sand area, there is some ocean quag that goes on. And then your fixed gear guys, which are your lobster pot guys, your gill nets, a lot of gill netting in Rhode Island, and your fish pots, mostly for black sea bass and scup. These are some of the topics that are covered in the fisheries chapter. There's the marine fisheries resources, identifying what types of fish that are out there and other animals. There's stocks of concern, which I think they all are, personally. But there's some that are in different states of rebuilding and so on and so forth. There's mammals, protected species that have a higher level of concern than others. The endangered species, things like that. The fish habitat, that's something that we really don't know enough about. We're trying to learn more, but there's quite a bit of to learn there. The commercial and the recreational actual fisheries that take place within the SAM, and the economic significance of those fisheries. What types of impacts might take place on the fisheries if we were to develop this area in a different way than it is now. And then the policies and standards. This is an important part to me. As we went through this process, we spent a lot of time talking about the different types of fisheries and identifying a whole bunch of different areas. And it's pretty apparent, as you'll see in a few more slides, that fishing takes place throughout this whole area. And developing wind technology is going to affect that in some way. So it's my opinion that it's very important to develop policies and standards in a marine spatial planning initiative that address the potential conflicts and also dealing with mitigation of any industry, whether it's recreational or commercial, that is affected by any changes in that area. They put together a technical advisory committee, and this committee was made up of a bunch of the different fisheries management organizations, the ASMFC, the New England Council, the New England Marine Fisheries Services in there, the Department of Environmental Management, which is Rhode Island's state organization for fisheries management. There's some NGOs here like Save the Bay, Conservation Law Foundation, the Nature Conservancy, so on and so forth. And then on this side, you've got all the different stakeholders from the fishing community. And that's what you get. Put all those people in a room. That happens. I can say from a fisherman's perspective that the hardest thing to do is to sit down in a room with a bunch of those folks that are green groups and the managers that are telling you can't go fishing here and you can't go fishing then and it's got to be this big and so on, and to try to talk to them in a good way about marine spatial planning, that was a challenge. But it's a challenge that I feel has to be met, and it's the most important factor, in my opinion, about the fishing community maintaining a seat at the table. I think it's a valuable lesson to be learned that all the fishermen have got to just get over any conflicts that they have and sit down and have an honest conversation with all the different people involved. And the end result is going to be worth it. It's a little bit of a tough pill to swallow at times, but it can be done, and I'm here to say it's the right thing to do. I'm just going to take a little break here for one second. So once we put all those people into a room, we got a whole bunch of knowledge together. We all worked hard and we created a whole bunch of maps that show where we like to fish. This is the recreational fishing effort in the area. This is your fixed gear guys, your mobile gear and your gill net. And there's some data backing that up. I'm going to kind of breeze through a few of these slides here. Basically, this is via VTR information from the Gillnet guys. This is historic trawl grounds. And the next picture is the data that the trawl guys actually gave to the Senate. So what's important here is that's what the state had. That's what really happens. This data came from 1975, and this is more current. So the point I'm trying to make is you have to be at the table in order to be able to tell the state folks that the data they have is a little old. And if you don't want to take that initiative, they're going to use the stuff from 1975. So that's the real point to take out of those two slides. There's some more VTR data from the scallop guys. And there's some more VTR data from the bottom trawl guys. It was quite a bit of work to put all this together, but it came out, I think, pretty good. And that's your mobile gear, guys. So now you look and you see the whole area is used, every last bit of it. And how are you going to fit these things? We pick it up. We use it. I guess that project's dead in the water. That's not how it works out. There's going to be compromise, and that's what I'm here to tell you that can happen. So some important points to take home here from what I've got to say is that the fishermen use the entire area, and that fisheries are very dynamic. The economic value of fisheries is dynamic, as we're learning right now. As stocks decline, they're not worth peanuts, but then as stocks rebuild, the industry is very valuable. Fisheries will be impacted, no way about it. Fisheries will continue to be an important part of this whole area. And fisheries do not have exclusive domain. The fishermen need to stay involved in this process. It's a long process, takes quite a few years, and to try to get to all of these meetings is a challenge, but I definitely recommend that you do take the time. You get together with a bunch of your buddies, pick some folks that can swap it up a little bit, but make sure you have representation at every single meeting. Don't miss a single one. The better the data that you put in, the better the data that you're going to get out. As I showed earlier, that slide from 1975, the state was going to use that. That's what they said. Well, this is what we have. Well, we were able to show them that, no, that's not really how the dragomen work anymore. They've moved further offshore. So they wouldn't have that if it wasn't for the fishermen cooperating. And again, talking about the policies and standards, very important to keep in mind, as we go through this process, we're recognizing that there's going to be areas we can't fish anymore. And the only way to get mitigated properly is to have policies and standards in play that that protect you and recognize that. Some research topics that we discovered that we really need to work on a little bit more is the habitat. A couple people talked about the electromagnetic fields and how skates and sharks seem to be attracted to them, but other fish seem to feed it. So we need to learn more about that. The economics, we really don't have a lot of good economic data from the fisheries perspective. A lot of guys, you know, for a million reasons, it's just not there. We need to work on that. Life history of some of the species that live in the area, so on and so forth. So there's still a lot of opportunity for research to take place. We're in favor of the more that they can get, the better the project is going to be. And learn to live with a little strife. But it all works out. I had some questions here, but I think following along with the procedures, we're just going to wait till the very end. Thank you very much.